Welcome to Susitna Writer's Voice, area writers reading their work. Greetings, welcome to October and to Stardate Susitna, a KTNA program about the night sky events over the Upper Susitna Valley. I'm Kathleen Fleming. Among other things, this episode will include Mercury in the morning, Venus in the evening, the moon's social agenda, more about next year's total solar eclipse, and Happy New Year! That's according to a couple of calendars that are probably not hanging on your wall. Stay tuned. Dark, 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 eh? Autumn before snow on moonless nights is quite the darkest time of year. The yellow leaves on my trail seemed to glow with even a little ambient light, which was helpful one late night when I forgot my headlamp and walked my crooked trail with just the luminous smartphone screen. Not ideal. Now the yellow trail is turning shades of brown, and I double-check to make sure the headlamp is in my pack. What a glorious run of clear weather we recently had. Those dark nights were full of stars, the Milky Way, a few meteors, and all over aurora. I trust you got at least a glimpse of the results of that long-lived and fast-moving blast of material from the sun that sparked the northern lights from the Arctic down into the lower 48. I actually set my chair up facing southeast. The hour that I watched one of those nights produced brief knots of brightness, but mostly faint, pulsing all over the entire sky. Freaky. It was so cool to see people in and out of their vehicles at key viewing spots as I'd leave work between 10 and 11 p.m. those nights. As of Sunday afternoon, the UAF Aurora forecast is calling for continued overhead lights for the Upper Susitna Valley through Wednesday, with level 5 dropping to level 3. However, the National Weather Service is calling for cloudy skies until Wednesday. Frequency of northern lights will likely taper off over the next few years as the sun is past the current cycle's sunspot maximum. Still, one never knows. Just keep checking. Now let's anticipate the motions of the moon this week. New moon was last Friday, Alaska time. Moon and sun moved more or less together through the daytime sky. Then the moon began its week-long journey toward the sun's mid-winter position along the ecliptic, which is where it will be at the end of this week when it has waxed to the first quarter phase. Without going into all the details that lead to such enormous disappointments, a fabulous lineup of moon and planets after sunset will be nigh impossible to see from Alaska. The moon is near Venus Sunday and Monday evenings, then it approaches Saturn Wednesday evening, and then La Luna is well above Mars on Friday the 7th. Trouble is, all those planets are so close to the southwest and south horizons as to be barely visible, if at all. A lower latitude would greatly improve the spectacle. I would like to encourage you to search for Venus and the crescent moon during the day, if the clouds part on Monday. Look maybe a fist width or more just above the due south horizon around 3 to 4 in the afternoon on Monday. Both of these objects are visible in the daytime sky, but will be difficult with them so near the horizon. Venus will be close to the lower right of the crescent. Oh, and by the way, I feel lucky to have seen elusive little Mercury one of those clear mornings last week. It was about 10 degrees above the horizon less than an hour before sunrise. The sky was bright enough to erase all the stars, but Mercury was plenty obvious. Luckily, I have fairly low terrain looking east from my house. Now Mercury appears to fall back toward the sun so that the close conjunction of Jupiter and Mercury on Tuesday the 11th will be embedded in the too bright morning twilight. If you listen to the radio as much as I do, you've heard talk about the Jewish celebration of Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. Months and celebration days in most of the Middle East traditionally begin with the first sighting of the new moon, actually the super thin crescent after what we call new moon. First sightings can vary from year to year and place to place, and therefore the actual dates may vary from the anticipated dates. But Sunday, October 2nd at sundown is, or was, the first day of the Jewish year AM 5777, 5777. In the Hebrew calendar, this is the beginning of the year 5777, Anno Mundi, or since the creation of the world. Rosh Hashanah is always in the fall, but can occur any time between September 5th and October 5th. It is calculated to be 163 days after Passover, which typically begins on the night of the full moon after the spring equinox. The Hebrew calendar is lunisolar, meaning they used the first sighting of the crescent moon above the western horizon after sunset to mark the beginning of the month. But they also used the season markers, equinoxes and solstices, to set dates, and therefore keep the months somewhat in sync with the seasons. The Islamic calendar is different. Though Sunday, October 2nd, also marks New Year's Day in the calendar used by Muslims around the world, it is the first day of Muharram, beginning the year 1438 AH, and is a national holiday in some countries, such as India, Indonesia, Jordan, and the UAE. AH means Anno Hegiria, Latin for in the year of the Hijra, which is when Muhammad and his followers migrated from Mecca to Medina, which is the starting point for calculating what year this marks. The tricky thing is that the Islamic calendar is purely lunar. Since there are 12 and a third lunar cycles in one solar year, the purely lunar calendar is quickly out of sync with the seasons. The first day of the Islamic calendar moves about 10 days earlier each year, always starting when the first crescent moon is visible after new moon. So New Year's Day in the Muslim calendar moves through the calendar that we use, the Gregorian calendar, because it is based purely on lunar cycles. And the Jewish calendar is based on lunar cycles, but it is adjusted so that New Year's Day is always in the fall. I sort of got into this a bit in my research and found that the two calendars have the same New Year's Day about every 33 years, and for 2 or 3 years in a row. It would be lovely to think that this bodes well for peace between peoples who have been at such odds with each other for so long. The coincidence of the New Year's holy days happens this year, next year, and in 2018. All of this is included in Stardate Susitna because of the astronomical aspects of their calendars. I wish one and all a Happy New Year. Now to the continuing segment I'll be talking about in each Stardate Susitna program through this winter, the total solar eclipse of August 21st, 2017. Today I want to run through the book I'm using, a copy of which I purchased for the Talkeetna Public Library behind the desk. Just ask the librarian to get it for you. There are several publications about this, the first total solar eclipse to hit the U.S. mainland in nearly 40 years. As an eclipse chaser, Fred Espenak has long been my go-to guy. Mr. Eclipse published eclipse bulletins for NASA until 2009 with co-author Jay Anderson. Then they got into on-demand publishing and got back into print publications for this upcoming event. Eclipse Bulletin, Total Solar Eclipse of 2017, August 21, is the title, and it was written with the intermediate to professional in mind. So much information, but light on the newbie stuff. It assumes you already know what causes an eclipse. There are entire chapters that I will likely skip. Lunar limb adjustments and sorrow cycles include tons of math, and understanding such things are unnecessary to finding your eclipse site and appreciating the entire event. Well, section 2, local circumstances for the eclipse, explains the two different shadows of the moon, the penumbra, which is large and bright, and the umbra, which is small and dark. Any place that sees a partial solar eclipse is in the penumbra, which includes all of North and much of South America. Just that 90-mile-wide path from Oregon to South Carolina will have the umbra envelop them. Totality. Woohoo! There are 30 pages of cities and towns that will see a partial eclipse. Anchorage and Fairbanks are the only two places listed for Alaska. About half the sun will be covered by the moon at about 9:15 a.m. on August 21st. From start to finish, Alaskans along the railboat should watch from 8:20 to 10:20. Well, that's an example of the sort of information in this table. Then there are 20 pages of detailed maps along the path of totality, basically road atlas maps showing towns, roads, rivers, lakes, etc. Section 4 has basic as well as professional info about viewing safety and different types of filters, then a fantastic section about eclipse photography. Section 5 is very important when it comes to selecting your viewing site, climatology along the umbral path. It's a big deal. You want to avoid cloud cover if at all possible. The tables are based on historical data and obviously cannot predict the future, but you wouldn't want to choose a place where there is a very high probability of fog or solid overcast on October 21st. Topography and time of day influence fog and cloud formation. The Oregon coast may be too foggy on eclipse morning. Other states may have typical afternoon cumulus cloud formation. The tables for the states from Oregon to South Carolina include data from airports around the state with percentage probability of clear sky to overcast and everything in between to thick fog and percent of possible sunshine. You got family in Tennessee? Check the August sky condition stats for Nashville, Smyrna, and Chattanooga. Section 6 is a good read. It is entitled A Travelogue Along the Umbral Path. Jay Anderson and another Canadian drove the highways and byways along the path of totality and made notes of the interesting places they saw. If you don't have family to tie yourself to, find a scenic setting or just some place you'd like to visit. Check the climatology tables and start making your plans. This Eclipse Bulletin by Fred Espinac and Jay Anderson is available to study at the Talkeetna Public Library. Just ask the librarian. I'll have more about eclipse resources in future programs. Have a great week and keep looking up.
You've been listening to Susitna Writer's Voice, a production of Talkeetna Community Radio. You can hear these recordings anytime at ktna.org. New contributors are always welcome. You may call the station at 733-1700 for more information.